I'm going to try to finish through chapter 6. So what are the two parts of Daniel?
Future and being faithful.
Right. Stories about being faithful. All right. Stories that preach, basically. And then prophecies of the future. And what's the connection? Well, if you understand that God rules the nations, then you figure out he could probably rule your bank account and your job as well. Okay? So Nebuchadnezzar, Daniel 4 is kind of interesting because the first two-thirds of it is a letter written by Nebuchadnezzar. And basically, Nebuchadnezzar says, let me tell you about Jehovah. Here's what Jehovah did. It's kind of cool. So Nebuchadnezzar, he had a couple of dreams. He had the dream way back in around 602 B.C. That's Daniel chapter 2. We're going to cover that tomorrow. So now the year is around, it's hard to say exactly, but it's around 570 B.C. So Nebuchadnezzar has been a king for more than a generation, the most powerful man in the world for all this time. All right, and so near the end of his life, because the first dream happened during the early part of his reign, then he has another dream well into his reign, maybe 570, maybe 575 B.C., something like that. So Daniel chapter 4 is roughly 30 years after Daniel 1 and Daniel 3. So he has a dream, and he's going to tell you about his dream, starting in verse 10. These are the visions I saw, Nebuchadnezzar says, while lying in bed. I looked, and there before me stood a tree in the middle of the land. Its height was enormous. The tree grew large and strong, and its top touched the sky. It was visible to the ends of the earth. Its leaves were beautiful, its fruit abundant, and on it was food for all. Under it, the wild animals found shelter. The birds lived in its branches. From it, every creature fed. In the visions I saw while lying in bed, I looked, and there before me was a holy one, a messenger coming down from heaven. He called out in a loud voice, cut down the tree, trim off its branches, strip off its leaves, scatter its fruit, let the animals flee from under it and the birds from its branches. But let the stump and its roots bound with iron and bronze remain in the ground, in the grass of the field. Let it be drenched with the dew of heaven, and let him, this tree is called him, right? Let him live with the animals among the plants of the earth. Let his mind be changed from that of a man, and let him be given the mind of an animal till seven times pass by for him. The decision is announced by messengers. The holy ones declare the verdict so that the living may know that the Most High is sovereign over all kingdoms on the earth. That's Jehovah, right? Gives them anyone he wishes and set them over the lowliest of people. This is the dream I, King Nebuchadnezzar, had. Now, Belteshazzar, tell me what it means, for none of the wise men in my kingdom can interpret it for me, but you can because the Spirit of the holy gods is on you. Now, what I didn't read is the earlier part where he told this dream to the magicians and the astrologers and all these other religious mumbo-jumbo fake people. And he said, interpret the dream for me. And they said, we can't. Now, what's interesting is Daniel chapter 2 and Daniel chapter 4 are the opposite. Daniel chapter 2, he didn't tell them the dream. And he said, interpret it for me. And they're going to say, well, whoa, you know, you got to tell us the dream. But here, he tells them the dream. Now, they refuse to interpret it, all right? But I think I know why. Because the message of this dream was pretty obvious, right? Who's it about? It's about Nebuchadnezzar. Right? Unlike in Daniel 2, where they didn't even know what the dream is, never mind be able to interpret it. All right, so the reason they wouldn't interpret it is because they're a bunch of fakers. Here, oh, they know what it's about, so why don't they want to interpret it? Because Nebuchadnezzar would kill them, right, if he told them the truth. So Nebuchadnezzar's thinking, man, this dream is from the gods. Maybe it's from God, Jehovah. This is a prophecy. This is not just some random dream I had. So who am I going to get to interpret it for me? I know one guy who's going to tell me the truth. So he calls in Nebuchadnezzar. All right? So Daniel, also known as Belteshazzar, he was greatly perplexed, and his thoughts terrified him like anybody else. I'm about to tell the most powerful man in the world that you're going to go crazy and lose all your power. So he says here, Belteshazzar answered, I guess we're in what, verse 19? My Lord, if only the dream applied to your enemies, and it meaning to your adversaries. The tree you saw, which grew large and strong, with its touching the sky. Do you think Nebuchadnezzar knew the dream was about himself? I think he knew full well it was about himself. That's why he was so disturbed. I don't know this, but I'm pretty sure. The tree you saw, which grew large and strong with its top touching the sky, visible to the whole earth, with beautiful leaves and abundant fruit, providing food for all, giving shelter to the wild animals and having nesting places in its branches for the birds. Your Majesty, you are that tree. The boldness, speaking truth to power. Nebuchadnezzar, it's about you. A true disciple speaks truth to power. All right? You've become great and strong. Your greatness has grown until it reaches the sky, and your dominion extends to the distant parts of the earth. All right? And he's basically telling him what's going to happen. Verse 23. Your Majesty saw a Holy One, a messenger coming from heaven and saying, cut down the tree, destroy it, but leave the stump bound with iron and bronze in the grass of the field while its roots remain in the ground. Let him be drenched with the dew of heaven. Let him live with the wild animals until seven times pass for him. This is the interpretation, Your Majesty. And this is the decree the Most High has issued against my Lord the King. You'll be driven away from the people. We'll live with the wild animals. You will eat grass like an ox. Be drenched with the dew of heaven. Seven times will pass by for you until you acknowledge that the Most High is sovereign over all kingdoms on the earth and gives them to anyone he wishes. The command to leave the stump of the tree with its root means that your kingdom will be restored to you when you acknowledge that heaven rules. Therefore, Your Majesty, be pleased to accept my advice. Renounce your sins by doing what is right and your wickedness by being kind to the oppressed. It may be then that your prosperity will continue. All right, so do you think Nebuchadnezzar chose to repent and to be kind to the oppressed and all that sort of stuff? Sure he did. Sure he did. For like 6 months, you know? One of those under pressure kind of conversions that you could probably be a little bit skeptical about, I would say. All right. But see, God's intent was that he learned that God rules the nations. Right? Verse 17. I think of verse 17 is kind of like a theme passage, certainly for chapter 4, but maybe for the whole book. This decision is announced by messengers. The Holy Ones declared a verdict, so that the living may know that the Most High is sovereign over all kingdoms on earth. And he gives them to anyone he wishes. And he sets over them the lowliest of people. God rules the nations. So this is my speculation. You said no. I said yes. I don't know who's right. It doesn't matter. I think he probably, you know, had that sort of brief repentance. But then, you know, the world overcame him. So it's a few months later, and Nebuchadnezzar, he's hanging out up on his palace. And he's looking out over the city that he'd built. And it was truly a great city. Yep. I think I had a quote. No. Yeah. This is Herodotus's description of the city. The city stands in a broad plain, an exact 120, is 13 miles in length each way. 13 miles, 13 miles, 13 miles, a huge city. It circuits 480 furlongs. It's surrounded in the first place by a broad and deep moat of water, behind which rises a wall 87 feet high. I'm sorry, 87 feet wide. The wall of the city was 87 feet thick, and it says here it was 350 feet high. On the top, along the edge of the wall, they constructed buildings. The city is divided into two portions, and apparently on the top, two chariots could ride next to each other all the way around the city. It was a huge wall. And then there were the beautiful gardens of Babylon, one of the great seven wonders of the world. So Nebuchadnezzar is standing up and he's thinking, I'm pretty awesome. Wow. I've done some pretty cool stuff. Verse 28. All this happened to King Nebuchadnezzar 12 months later after his brief repentance, in my opinion, but maybe I'm wrong. All right. As the king was walking on the roof of the royal palace of Babylon, he said, is not this the great Babylon I've built as the royal residence by my mighty power and for the glory of my majesty? I, me, myself. How many of the bricks do you think he actually laid? But really, honestly, it was his idea. He was quite a guy. Even as the words were on his lips, a voice came from heaven. This is what's decreed for you, King Nebuchadnezzar. Your royal authority has been taken away from you. You'll be driven away from the people. You will live with the wild animals. You'll eat grass like an ox. And Nebuchadnezzar's like, oh no. Oh, fool. Fool that I am. They laughed at Noah when he built the ark. Noah, what are you doing? You're an idiot. What are you building this boat for? You need to be building your wealth and your farm. But you know what? When the rain came down and the door to the ark closed, they weren't laughing at Noah anymore, were they? And the citizens in Jericho, these guys are marching around the city, making fools of themselves. Look at those people. Look at those Alpha Omega disciples on campus. It's Merced. It's 103 degrees and we're out sharing our faith. Twice I nearly passed out just from being out there at the table, you know. Like, what are they doing? But you know what? When they blew the horns and the wall fell down, they weren't laughing anymore. And Nebuchadnezzar, he's not laughing anymore. He's like, oh, I am in so much trouble. All right? Your royal authority has been taken from you. You'll be driven away from the people. You'll live with the wild animals. You'll eat grass like an ox. Seven times will pass by for you until you acknowledge that the Most High is sovereign over all the kingdoms on earth and gives them to anyone he wishes. Immediately what had been said about Nebuchadnezzar was fulfilled. He was driven away from the people. He ate grass like an ox. His body was drenched with the dew of heaven until his hair grew like the feathers of an eagle and his nails like the claws of a bird. At the end of that time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, raised my eyes towards heaven. My sanity was restored. Then I praised the Most High. I honored and glorified him who lives forever. My question is, why did it take 7 years? Well, I guess because the prophecy said 7 years. Yeah. All right. How might we be like Nebuchadnezzar? Oh, man. This ministry's awesome. Man, I'm doing pretty good. Hope people are noticing. Hope people are noticing. I can remember, like, we'd have a banquet every year at the University of Colorado back in the day, and they'd be giving out awards. I'd be sitting there, hope they notice. Hope, I hope they mention my name. I'm so embarrassed to think about that. Is this not this great Babylon that I built by as my royal residence by my great majesty? Is not this great Bible talk? We're the top Bible talk. We baptize more than any other Bible talk. No, we would never, ever be like Nebuchadnezzar, giving credit to ourselves. No. Never. Christians are not, don't have these sinful tendencies to get credit to themselves. Deuteronomy 8, 6 through 18, God says, and you gather wealth. Remember, it's God who gives you the ability to even create wealth in the first place. All right? There are two ways God can humble us. One way is by blessing us tremendously and giving us everything He wants us to have. We go, amen, praise God. There's another way He can humble us, by taking it all away. True. All right? The choice is yours. You know what I'm saying? 1 Corinthians 4, verse 7. I'm afraid that those who do ministry are particularly susceptible to this sin. Okay, just so you know. Because, you know, success is part of the name of the game in ministry, in case you didn't know. 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 7 says, "For who makes you different from anyone else? What do you have that you did not receive? And if you received it, why do you boast as though you did not?" So we have to remember that. It's not because of my awesomeness. Now, by the way, you're actually pretty awesome. Chloe, I don't know you, but I think you're probably pretty awesome. All right, and that's okay. It's okay to feel good. You know, having a positive self-image, that's an okay thing. But we always need to understand that anything good we have... Do you have anything that God didn't give you? Well, there's your pridefulness and your arrogance, but other than that, pretty much everything, right? So while the words were still on his lips. So the lesson here is we need to learn where the good stuff comes from. If you go to the Pergamum Museum there in Berlin, they still have reconstructed the Wall of Babylon. It is truly massive. If you ever can visit that museum, it's pretty cool. Alright, so let's finish out this chapter. Alright, and Daniel, pagan that he is, who came to believe in Jehovah, right? I mean, at this point, essentially, he's become, I wouldn't say a disciple, but he's become a believer in Jehovah. He's preaching everywhere. Bel, you know, Dagon, but Jehovah. All right? So here's his little message to his people. "At the end of that time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, raised my eyes towards heaven. My sanity was restored. Then I praised the Most High. I honored and glorified Him who lives forever. His dominion is an eternal dominion. His kingdom endures from generation to generation. All the peoples of the earth are regarded as nothing. He does as He pleases with the powers of heaven and the peoples of the earth. No one can hold back His hand or say to Him, 'What have you done?' At the same time, my sanity was restored. My honor and splendor were returned to me for the glory of my kingdom. My advisors and nobles sought me out." "And I was restored to my throne because and became even greater than before. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and exalt and glorify the kingdom of heaven, because everything He does is right and all His ways are just." And here's the theme of Daniel chapter 4. "Those who walk in pride, He is able to humble." Can I slightly change the scripture? "Those who walk in pride, He will humble." All right. Daniel 5. I love Daniel 5. The writing on the wall. So Daniel 1, 2, and 3 are in the last decade of the 7th century BC, 60-something BC. Daniel 4, about 4 years later. Daniel 5, the year is 538 BC. At this point, Daniel's been in captivity for more than 67, almost 68 years. So how old is he? He's like 83 years old. He's even older than I am. That's how old he is. I call Daniel chapter 4, a king eats grass. I call Daniel chapter 5, party animal meets man of God. Okay? So let's see. King Belshazzar gave a great banquet for 1,000 of his nobles. Again, the year is 538 BC. In fact, we know the exact date. Herodotus tells us the exact date that this party happened. In fact, Herodotus tells us that at the time of the conquest, the conquering of the city of Babylon, there was a huge party going on in the palace, confirming exactly, precisely this story. So who is this guy? Who's this guy Belshazzar? It's not Belteshazzar, it's Belshazzar. All right. Well, Belshazzar's father was Nabonidus. And Nabonidus was, he did a palace coup. I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's actually read into this a little bit further. King Belshazzar gave a great banquet for 1,000 of his nobles and drank wine with them. While Belshazzar was drinking his wine, he gave orders to bring in the gold and silver goblets that Nebuchadnezzar, his father, had taken from the temple in Jerusalem. This takes you right back to Daniel chapter 1, right? All right, so that the king and his nobles, his wives and his concubines might drink from them. So they brought in the gold tablets that had been taken from the temple of God in Jerusalem. And the king and his nobles, his wives and his concubines drank from them. As they drank the wine, they praised the gods of gold and silver, of bronze, iron, wood, and stone. Very bad mistake. They took the holy items in the temple of God and they were getting drunk and raising these items that were taken from the temple and praising the gods of wood and stone and silver. That's a really bad idea. God puts up with a certain amount, but at some point God says, all right, that's it. No, we're going to put an end to this, right? So, suddenly, and by the way, when they excavated the city of Babylon, they found the actual room where this happened. All right? The inscription in the wall is not still there, but that would have been cool. That would have been pretty good, but anyway. Suddenly, the fingers of a human hand appeared and wrote on the plaster of the wall near the lampstand in the royal palace. The king watched the hand as it wrote. Just imagine the scene. Hundreds of drunken revelers partying, and it's, you know, you go to a party and you turn on the lights suddenly, you know, it's just, you know, oh, okay. That's what's going on here. Okay. Stop the party. And then it's like, imagine this. Could they literally see a hand or do they just see the writing appearing on the wall? And they were mortified, caught in the act. All right? Crazy stuff. The man appeared and wrote in the plaster of the wall near the lampstand in the royal palace. The king watched the hand as it wrote. His face turned pale. He was so frightened. His legs became weak. His knees were knocking, and I think he peed his pants. The king summoned the enchanters, astrologers, diviners. You'd think that they would have learned by now that these, you know, charismatic, whatever, healings and whatever, fake. It's all fake. It's just a show. It's just a show. You'd think they would have figured it out by now, but I guess people don't ever really get around to figuring that out. They like the show. All right? The enchanters, astrologers, diviners, they said to these wise men of Babylon, whoever reads this writing and tells me what it means will be clothed in purple and have a gold chain placed around his neck. who would be made the third highest ruler in the kingdom. Let's stop right there. All right, now, again, a lot of people want to undermine Daniel. No such person ever lived, just a bunch of stories made up to make the, so the Jewish parents can tell their kids to be good. And first of all, no Greek historian, including Herodotus or Thucydides, ever even mentioned this guy Belshazzar. Who's Belshazzar? You know, whatever. Typical, you know, just Bible, typical. But then, they were doing an excavation in the city of Ur. Alright, in the ziggurat in Ur. Do I have a... Oops. Yeah, in the ziggurat in Ur, and they found an inscription that explained what happened. So there's, first of all, there was Nebuchadnezzar. Then there was his son, Evil-Merodach, who ruled for a while. And then there was a palace coup by this guy, Nabonidus. And Nabonidus made himself king, but he was not part of the royal lineage. All right, so he had no real reason to be king. So what he did was he married Nebuchadnezzar's daughter. She's the mother that's in this story. So basically, he married into the royal line, and he had a son. And guess what his name was? Belshazzar. And the thing is, Belshazzar, unlike Nabonidus, was the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar. So Belshazzar had legitimacy. So what Nabonidus did, according to this inscription, is he made Belshazzar be his regent king, the sort of the second king. And what we know about Nabonidus is he wasn't all that interested in ruling. He went off into the desert. He kind of did some mystical things and stuff like that. He left his son Nabonidus to rule in his place. And Belshazzar essentially ruled the kingdom. Now notice what it says here. He said, all right, anybody who can interpret the writing on the wall, I'm going to give them the third place in the kingdom. So why the third place? Because Belshazzar occupied the second place. So not only does this inscription found sometime in, I think, the 60s, not only does it confirm the biblical story about Belshazzar, as Christians would go, yeah, right, what else is new? Of course it's true. But also, it explains this fact that if this was a made-up story, then why make up the thing about the third place in the kingdom? Okay? So that's sort of cool. Confirming the accuracy of the Bible, I kind of like that. That's a cool thing. All right. So anyway, then all the king's wise men came in. They could not read the writing or tell the king what it meant. So King Belshazzar became even more terrified. His face grew more pale. His nobles were baffled. The queen, this queen being his mother, actually, all right, not his wife, his mother. So this is the daughter of Nebuchadnezzar. She knew Daniel well. The queen, hearing the voices of the king and his nobles, came into the banquet hall. May the king live forever, she said. Don't be alarmed. Don't look so pale. There's a man in your kingdom who has the spirit of the holy gods on him. In the time of your father, who was found to have insight and intelligence and wisdom like that of the gods, your father, King Nebuchadnezzar, actually his grandfather, appointed him chief of the magicians. He did this because Daniel, whom the king called Belteshazzar, was found to have a keen mind, knowledge, and understanding, and also the ability to interpret dreams, explain riddles, solve difficult problems. Call for Daniel, and he will tell you what the writing means. So Daniel was brought before the king. The king said to him, are you Daniel, one of the exiles my father the king brought from Judah? I have heard that the spirit of the gods is on you, and that you have insight, intelligence, and outstanding wisdom. The wise men and enchanters were brought before me to read this writing, tell me what it means, but they could not explain it. Now I've heard that you are able to give interpretations, to solve difficult problems. If you can read this writing and tell me what it means, you'll be clothed in purple, have a gold chain placed around your neck. You'll be made the third highest ruler in the kingdom. Okay. I love Daniel's response. Daniel, he's always on it, you know. Here's a guy who really trusts God. Then Daniel answered the king, you may keep your gifts. That's what he said to Aspenaz, right? You can keep your job. You can keep your job. Or you can give me the job. Up to you. But I'm going to be faithful to God. That's the main thing. You got to understand. You got to understand that. You may keep your gifts for yourself and give your rewards to someone else. Nevertheless, I'll read the writing for the king and tell him what it means. Your majesty, the most high God, gave your father Nebuchadnezzar. And then he preaches a sermon. He's there. You should have been like Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar believed in Jehovah. All right? I like this. It's been 67, 68 years. And Daniel is still faithful to God. He's the same now as he was then. All right? He lived a faithful life. So, here we go. Because of the high position he gave him, all the nations and people of every language dreaded and feared him. He's talking about Nebuchadnezzar. Those the kings wanted to put to death, he put to death. Those he wanted to spare, he spared. Those he wanted to promote, he promoted. Those he wanted to humble, he humbled. But when his heart became arrogant and hardened with pride, he was deposed from his royal throne, stripped away from his glory. That's chapter 4, right? Driven away from the people, etc. Until he acknowledged that the Most High God is sovereign over all the kingdoms on earth and sets over them anyone he wishes. But you, Belshazzar, his son, have not humbled yourself, though you knew all this. Instead, you've set yourself up against the Lord of heaven. You had the goblets from his temple brought to you, and you and your nobles, your wives, and your concubines drank wine from them. You praised the gods of silver and gold, bronze, wood, and stone, which cannot see or hear or understand, but you did not honor the God who holds in your hand your life, all of your ways. Anyway, the inscription was this: Mene, Mene, Tekel, Parson. Mene has two words in the Persian language. It means counted, but it also means completed. So basically it says, God says, you've been weighed, you've been found wanting, and Tekel means weighed, and then Parson, which is interesting because it's got a double meaning. It means divided, but it also means Persia. And guess what kingdom divided Babylon that very night? All right? So, moving forward. Then at Belshazzar's command, Daniel was clothed in purple. A gold chain was placed around his neck. He was proclaimed the third highest ruler in the kingdom. That very night, Belshazzar, king of the Babylonians, was slain. And Darius the Mede took over the kingdom at the age of 62. So there you go. God rules the nations. All right, Daniel 6. All right, Daniel in the lion's den. Every kid's favorite story, right? They actually tell this story to kids, like throw them into a lion. It's kind of a violent story. All right, here we see how the world reacts to a righteous man of God. All right, so basically then, Cyrus conquered Babylon, and he divided it up into many provinces. The chief province of Babylon, of Persia, was the Babylonian province. He put Darius the Mede over the Babylonian province. So Cyrus was the emperor. Darius ruled there in Babylon. Okay? And Darius divided up his kingdom. He gave four head dudes to kind of oversee his part of the empire. It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom. That's the Babylonian kingdom, which is a large province in the Persian Empire. With three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them so the king might not suffer loss. Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. That's the story that Steve Stevenson told. The bottom line is, the disciple is the best possible worker. I remember I had a friend, he worked for a union there in Wisconsin, and his attitude was, I go to work, I work for 8 hours, and I work as hard as I can for 8 hours. He was viciously persecuted by all of his fellow workers. Because all the other workers said, here's what the union does. We do as little as we possibly can. I don't want to be too tough on unions, but that's kind of how unions work. All right? Basically, they said, we do as little as we possibly can, because that then they'll have to hire more people and, you know, have more jobs and stuff like that. And my friend said, no, they're paying me. I'm going to work. And he was persecuted. But the bottom line is, Daniel is a paradigmatic figure of what a Christian should be on the job. All right? And so, Darius has these three people overseeing the government, especially the gathering of taxes. What do the other two do? You know, they skim a little bit off the top. I, you know, wash your hands, you wash mine, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. You know, they do what everybody does. Oh wait, not everybody. Because disciples, they just don't do that. So how do the other two guys feel about Daniel? He's making us look bad. I hope you make your fellow workers look bad. I mean, you should. It's not your goal. You're not trying to drag them into the mud. It's just like, you don't do that kind of stuff. You don't use profanity. You don't manipulate the facts to make it look like something that it's not. Christians, they just don't do that sort of stuff. Yeah. All right? They don't, you know, take stuff home that's not authorized. If they do, they'll simply ask. All right? So, at this, the administrators and the satraps try to find grounds for charges against Daniel in the conduct of government affairs. But they are unable to do so. Listen to this. All right, right here. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy, neither corrupt nor negligent. All right? Never, ever negligent. And never, ever corrupt. Got it? Never, ever negligent in your work this summer as a summer intern. The problem is, summer interns have relatively little oversight. You know? Unlike during the school year where you gotta show up to class, you gotta turn in your homework, this summer, you know, I don't know, Jacob, do you like ask every single day what they did and have to give accountability for every hour and every minute?
Only Dominic
Wells. All right, only Dominic. So this summer, you're going to have a lot of freedom. You're going to set your schedule, right? And you're going to report back. And you might possibly be tempted to kind of give a slightly rosy version of what actually happened. Don't bother to mention the bad and only mention the good. Or you might be tempted to kind of, you know, not work that hard. But really, all right, that's the internship, but that's just, this is, I mean, Jan and I shepherded singles for 12 years in San Diego. This is one of our favorite passages. Are you going to be a person of integrity? They're thinking, we got to get him on something. The only thing they could get him on was his religion. That should be you. The only thing your fellow workers can get on is your Christianity. And Steve and I both told stories like that. Right? They don't like what you're doing. By the way, some of them do. There's a small percentage who think it's so nice to have somebody who's just honest all the time. Right? That's the 5%. They're the ones who are going to come to church and become Christians. Great. Awesome. But then there's the 95% who are like, they don't really appreciate you're making them look bad. All right, so read this. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy, neither corrupt nor negligent, ever. All right, finally they said, we'll never find any basis for charges against this man, Daniel, unless it has something to do with the law of his God. I hope your co-workers, your fellow students, have to do the same calculus. All right, if I'm going to mess this person over, I'm going to have to use their love for God kind of to sort of mess them over. So they developed a plan. And this is how the world works, folks. Now, not everybody is this evil. You know, you're gonna find some pretty good people also on the job, some, but a lot of them are gonna be like these dudes. Now, how did Darius feel about Daniel? Darius loved Daniel. Cause Daniel was the one guy who the money that came in is the exact same amount that he collected. Alright, and people who were around Daniel knew that if you're gonna be corrupt, he's not gonna put up with it. So, Darius loved Daniel, but the other two, satrap guys, they don't like him. So these administrators and satraps went as a group to King and said, "May King Darius live forever. The royal administrators, prefects, satraps, advisors, and governors have all agreed that you're the most amazing. These suck-up people. These, you know, sycophants. It's like people around a certain political leader that, oh, never mind, I won't go there right now. Who knows what I'm talking about? We're going to stay away from politics. We're going to right back to this story right here. All right. The royal administrators, prefects, satraps, advisors, governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict to enforce the decree that anyone prays to any god or human being during the next 30 days, except to you, Majesty. Oh yeah, we want to lift you up. We're behind you 100%. We all want everybody to worship you. Yeah, Darius, we're with you. All right? Anyone who prays to any god or human being during the next 30 days, except to you, Your Majesty, shall be thrown into the lion's den. Now, Your Majesty, issue the decree and put it in writing so that it cannot be altered in accordance with the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed. So King Darius put the decree in writing. Now, when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went to his upstairs room where the windows opened toward Jerusalem. Three times a day, he got down on his knees and he prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before. So these guys, they're just using Darius's pride against him, right? They're not stupid. All right. So Daniel, basically the decree was nobody can pray to any other god. So what could Daniel have done and still been faithful? He could have kept his window closed. Right? I mean, can they stop you from praying? They could put you in prison. They could take away your job, all right? But can they stop you from praying? No. So here's my question. Why did Daniel keep the window open? Okay? And let's apply that to our lives. Because it's pretty tempting when people are getting pressure for you to not stop doing the right thing, but kind of just be a little bit less, you know, a little bit more cautious, maybe just a little bit less in your face about it. Daniel, no way. Daniel will never, ever give up an opportunity to declare whose was his Lord. So he's saying, if you're going to make it illegal, then I'm going to just keep my windows open. That's what he did. You see the message? See the example of Daniel?
Yeah.
All right. So these psychophantic suck-ups, who are using Darius's pride, manipulating that into destroying this one person who did the right thing. There you go. So let me see. Then these men went as a group. They found Daniel praying and asking God for help. So they went to the king and they spoke to him about the royal decree. Did you not publish a decree that during the next 30 days anyone who prays to any god or human being except you, Majesty, be thrown into lion's den? I saw that it's 207, so I'm going to just summarize. All right? And so, basically, the Medes and the Persians, did not have absolute power. In other words, there was a rule in the kingdom that if you publish a law, even if you're the king, you have to follow that law. So he's stuck. He did not want to do to Daniel what he did. But you guys know how the story ends, right? Pulls out Daniel, throws him into the lion's den. All right? Daniel's sitting there. How do you think Daniel felt? Because it's the entire night. He's got a bunch of lions sitting there in that lion's den. All right? What's going to happen? but Daniel, I think Daniel, I don't know, I think this time around Daniel kind of figured, you know what, I think God's going to actually come through on this one. I think he kind of knew this one was going to happen. So anyway, they come back, and Darius had a sleepless night because Darius loved Daniel, and he was just manipulated into this. So he comes out in the morning and says, Daniel, how's it going down there? And Daniel's there, I'm still doing pretty good, O king. They pull him out, and those other two satrap guys threw him in the lion's den. All right, so to summarize, because tomorrow we're going to look at Daniel 2, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. It's going to be some really awesome stuff. But we finished our section seeing Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Let them be examples for each one of us. God rules the nations. This summer, do not fear. What can man do to me? Hebrews 13. All right, so that's it. And we're done for the day.
All right, we're dismissed, you guys. You have free time until 7:30 at the beach. You probably should get there early, though, and get parking and get set up. Okay, any instructions for tonight, Kyle?
For tonight?
Yeah.
No. Yeah,
come on. Newport Beach.
Life is rough, you know. And, party at the beach.
There you go. And see you guys tomorrow morning, same time, 9:30. Well, thank you, John.
We're really slave drivers around here, right?
John, is Malcolm still in Merced?
No, Malcolm went back to Indiana. He got a job there.
Okay. Yeah. What is he doing? What job?
Something similar to what he's doing before. He's helping his mom. He's working with the singles. He's a little frustrated because he feels like stuff needs to happen with the singles and...